From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for the first part of our program today, we are going to start with a topic that first came to our attention thanks to a TV show. Here's a clip from the hit HBO Max TV series, The Pit. If you're not familiar with it, it's a hospital drama that follows a 15-hour work shift of the emergency department staff at a fictional teaching hospital in Pittsburgh. Let's take a listen.
I'm Roxy's death doula.
Her what?
To make their transition to death a more peaceful process. It's like a birth doula, but for the end of life.
Whatever you have to say about my condition, you can share with Lena, too.
We were just explaining that Roxy has a pathological fracture.
The treatment is immobilization and a long life.
Maybe we up her payment.
Yeah, sure. We could do that.
The bones should heal in about 6 weeks.
If I live that long.
Morphine PCA looks ready to go. Do you notice a difference?
Better.
Ah, great.
If she can go home with this?
Yeah. Though you'll need more equipment for the house now that she can't bear weight on her leg.
How do we get all that?
You don't. I do. I will get everything so that the two of you can get out of here and back to the kids at home.
Thank you.
All right, did you catch that? A death doula. It's a concept one of our producers was not familiar with, so we decided to turn that problem into our reporting, and so we are getting a better understanding about what a death or end-of-life doula does. Joining us to talk more about their profession now is Kim Burgess, an end-of-life doula with Comforting Transitions in O'Fallon, Illinois. Kim, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Darnell Lamont Walker, a death doula based in Georgia and Michigan. He's also written about his experiences in a book. The title is Never Can Say Goodbye, The Life of a Death Doula and the Art of a Peaceful End. Darnell, welcome to you as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We want to know, what plans have you made for your final days? What experiences have you had that might have benefited from this kind of help we're going to be talking about? Let us know, 800-222-9455. All right, Darnell, beyond what we heard in that little description from that TV show there, tell us more about what a death doula does.
Yeah, you know, it's, the bottom of it is that we are there to support someone through the end of life, the individual or the family, emotionally, physically, spiritually even. But also, a lot of us bring ourselves into the work. And so me as a writer, I come into someone's end of life and I want to help them tell their story, to leave something behind, to start a legacy project, whatever that is, even if it's just creating an obituary that actually tells their story. And so that's what I do. But there are so many who do many other things, bedside vigils, helping with advanced directives, helping pick a proxy. Anything you can imagine that happens at the end of life, we can cover.
I really appreciate that you mentioned the obituaries. There are so many of them are so badly written. No offense to the funeral directors. They do well in other things in life, but I've written a few for my own family members, and it's just such a stark contrast.
Because I think we live bigger lives than the two sentences we sometimes see in the obituaries. And it's, you know, there was a life there. And a lot of what I like to do is come in and be a witness to that and say, you lived, let's leave proof behind that happened, you know?
Yeah. All right. This concept may, let me read. So let me say, we asked our texting group about this. I mentioned some of the questions you can call in with. But we heard from people. Christopher in Brimfield, Illinois said, I think it's a great idea. Death is such a business in America. Yeah. We need it to be more family friendly and not corporate driven. But on the other hand, there were some questions. Lex in Champaign said, I see death doulas may train for only 6 weeks. My family has had good experiences with hospice over the last 10 years as various members have had extended illnesses. I think I'd stick with the known, especially when there are pain considerations. So thank you for those messages. Kim Burgess, I think that's a good way to sort of pivot into what is a death doula and how is it different from hospice care or palliative medicine or some of the other things people may be more familiar with?
Yes, absolutely. I love answering that question. Darnell's background was, you know, he brings his aspect of end-of-life doula as a writer. I actually bring mine more from the medical perspective. My journey was 17 years as a home health nurse And then I went on to get my nurse practitioner degree, wanting to work end of life, and looked into working for hospice in that role as a nurse practitioner. The thing is with hospice, as amazing as they are, I feel that as one of your listeners had commented, it is a business. And with that, you are assigned, for patients to see that day, you're on a time schedule, and you still have as much a support that you give, you still have some productivity that you have to meet. And whereas an end of life doula, that role can be infinitive time spent with that client and family. So I feel that my partnership as a doula, we work together, conjoining our services. Doulas do not take part, I guess, take over as a hospice, but we work together to support that client in their end of life journey.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, a nurse practitioner, you mentioned that, that's like an advanced type of nursing certification, right? You have to have a master's or a
That is
doctorate even.
correct. That is correct. Yes. Yes.
So it, can you, I mean, can you handle pain management yourself, or is that coordinated with others?
Yeah, actually, in my role as a doula, I do have those skills and I can. But on the other hand, I take off my nurse practitioner hat and when I put on my doula role hat. And when I do see that maybe pain is an issue, I have supported the families and the client to say, you know what, I do believe that your medication can be increased. I see that our pain is not being supported by what we have. And then I will coach them or on their behalf make a phone call to the hospice team. And like I said, I will let them drive those orders, but I am there to help guide and suggest. But not all doulas do that, right? You don't have to be in the medical field to be an end of life doula. I just have a very unique perspective to it as my career, my profession.
All right, Darnell. So let me ask you, how did you get into this line of work?
No, absolutely. I got in, and this goes sort of to what to the one comment. I got in watching my grandmother do this work, and she didn't do it as a death doula. She just did it as someone who loved family, who took care of people. And watching her take care of cousins and her sister and the many people whose bedside she sat beside, I knew that that's what love looked like. And so I moved through the world as that. And it wasn't until, I mean, and from the age of nine, and it wasn't until I was about 10 years ago, actually, when someone mentioned that the work I'd been doing was the work of a death doula. And I had never heard the term before. I looked it up and I'm like, yeah, this is exactly what's been happening. And I realized that we're using this term, but this isn't new work. This isn't anything that we haven't been doing for the people we love. It's just I leaned in more with intention, and said, oh, I can do this for more people. I can make sure that more people aren't alone. But yeah, I started when I was unofficially, when I was about nine. I ended up volunteering at a hospice at 13, as an event coordinator. Not as, of course, not as someone who would sit with them, but I would sit with them when I'd go into the room and they'd say, could you just stay for a while? I haven't had anyone to talk to for a while. And me thinking, this is not a big deal. But now knowing how impactful that was, not only for them, but for me as well. But yeah, I've been doing it for a long time, under many, many titles, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that your grandmother did this not as a profession, just as a, as a thing you do for family, for friends. But as we have grown, apart, we move away more than we used to a few generations back. Maybe people don't have that extended family network. You're sort of, I mean, are you in some sense, and Kim, maybe I can come to you and talk about how, well, you did talk a little earlier, but I mean, are you seeing, that this is sort of replacing what has been lost as our society has moved into this more individual, atomized way of being?
Right. And actually, it is. I have supported a lady whose three children are out of state, right? And I was there every day to give them updates on her symptoms, because it was a fluctuation. We have good days, we have bad days. And at what point do we go, okay, kids, it's time to come and be by her side? Because this journey could last 4 months. And some of the children were not able to step away from their families and their work, even as much as they wanted to be there. It just wasn't in the reality. So I was there in their presence. In that way, I could take pictures and I could send them messages every day, how she's doing, and be present for her, until there was the time that I'm like, okay, now it is, our final days, and the best that we could, guess and guide along with hospice. And that's when the family did come, and I was able to be there and support all of them at that time. So it is, I find it more and more with, you're right, families are not local anymore to their older relatives. And this is where the death doula comes in.
Let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're talking about end-of-life care and the concept of a death doula. This is separate from hospice. It's separate from palliative care. It aims to help people in ways that maybe, may not be as accessible to them because family's out of town. Maybe they live in a more remote area. Who knows? Whatever reason. We're talking about this with Kim Burgess, who's an end-of-life doula with Comforting Transitions, and Darnell Lamont Walker, who's a death doula, and is also the author of the book Never Can Say Goodbye. It's interesting. You both identify a little differently. Kim is an end-of-life doula. Darnell, you're okay with death doula. Darnell, let me start with you. Talk about what you hear in that difference.
I actually don't hear a difference. I don't think there are any differences in what in the term. I think it's just what we're more comfortable with for me, and I accept each of them. I think for but for some people, when they hear death doula, they think I just cover that final moment, that last hour. And when they hear end of life doula, it's everything from the planning to the end. But I'm in there for it all. And so I respect whatever title people want to choose, or people choose for their work.
Well, maybe I should have framed it in the inverse, because Kim, I understand you do
I
prefer end of life. So tell me about that.
Wiser woman here, thanks. I just don't know if our society is ready for it, as an end of life doula. And I say end of life because I think it's a softer approach. I think when people, you're right, Darnell, when
Nobody wants
people
to die, right? Or most
right, when
people,
they hear death, they're like, oh, that's all you, and it's those final moments. And I want to capture them ahead of time to hear their stories, like Darnell, right? We want to bring life to the full life that they have lived. And if you don't mind, I would love to share a story. One of my ladies that I am currently an end of life doula for, she is a college professor for many, many, many years. And she was telling me her journey, that she was a college professor, she was doing okay. But then back in the 90s, this was the 1990s, early 2000s, she actually became a Mary Kay independent consultant. And she had learned, she said, through her Mary Kay training, how to actually present and how to sell. And she then used those skills to become a very good award-winning professor. And she said, because I guess going back to what Jornal said, writing obituaries and putting words to their story, I thought she would really highly focus on her career as a professor. And she said, no, it is actually what I did through Mary Kay, which was just interesting. Our perception of people's life isn't what they really cherish at the end. And we want to hear those stories. So we want to do what we call a life review. We sit and we talk about, what did your childhood look like? What did your teenage years look like? And so forth and so on. And during those stories is where we do a lot of our doula work as well.
Darnell, let me ask you, how does this process begin? How do you get hired? Is it families in crisis? Are more people thinking of this ahead of time when they're healthy and, maybe a little farther off from death? Talk about that.
Yeah, no.
And I should say we need to take a break in about a minute, so I am going to have to interrupt you. But go ahead.
I'll be as quick as possible, but interrupt when you can. More people. Thankfully, more people are coming to me because they want to plan ahead because they've seen what happens when we don't plan. And so, thankfully, we're moving more toward that. When that wasn't the case many years ago, when people were only calling at the very end. But I still get that too. I still get nurses who call when there are people and individuals in the hospital with no family. They'll call me in. And sometimes it'll just be people on the street who say, and we'll have a conversation. They say, oh, you're a death doula. Oh, I know someone. And so it's so many ways. But I'm so grateful that we are now planning more and more people are saying, oh, I am going to die. I should do this because I saw what happened when my mom died. And now I haven't spoken to, you know, siblings or relatives in years because we fought over what to do with, you know, the body, with the clothing at the funeral, with the will. And it's, well, if we can come in and help with that, why not call us? And so it's every step along the way. I have people who will seemingly be here for the next 40 years.
Yeah.
Who are calling and saying, I'd love to do something for my children and leave something behind for them.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue this conversation after a short break. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking today about death or end-of-life doulas. You might already be familiar with the concept of birth doulas who help prepare women for childbirth through often physical or emotional support. Well, a death or end-of-life doula works the same way, but at the other end of our lifespan, helping someone be as comfortable as they can as their time is coming to an end. You may have also noticed a death doula making an appearance on the TV show The Pitt, which is how this conversation came on our radar. We're talking about this with Darnell Walker, a death doula based in Georgia and Michigan. He's written about his experiences in a book just out this month. It's called Never Can Say Goodbye, The Life of a Death Doula and the Art of a Peaceful End. Also with us is Kim Burgess, an end-of-life doula with Comforting Transitions in O'Fallon here in Illinois. You can join us at 800-222-9455. Another text message I want to share from Randy in Glassford, who said, in part, I was the caregiver to both my parents through their last years, months, days, and hours. I did not want to do that work. In retrospect, no experience in life has shaped what I think and feel like the 5 years I gave my parents, keeping them home, through being the one to get them up, feed them, clean them, and in the end, hold their hand, and through the days when I had to let go. You want to share your experience, 800-222-9455. Darnell, how do you begin to get somebody thinking about death, right? The undiscovered country, that scary, scary transition for many people.
Mm-hmm. It varies from person to person. I'd love to come in and just listen and see where I can slide it in. There are folks who are very ready to talk about it. And usually when I come into a client, one of my first questions, as a death doula is, well, this is happening. How do you want to die? And it's usually a question they haven't been asked yet, no matter where they are on this journey, whether death is a day away or, you know, a couple of months away. But then there are folks like my dad who refuses to talk about death, will not ever. And so I have to kind of sneak it in to conversations where if we're talking about music, I'll listen to the song and I say, you know, what's the last song you want to hear when you're dying, you know, and he'll start the conversation and it'll go on for about 2 minutes before he realizes what's happening. but it's all the folks in between, you know, like there are people who are ready to share that story, especially if it's something that we don't know when, how, we don't really have control over it. But if we can just plan a little bit and if we can try to get some kind of control over it, then I try to give that to folks and say, hey, it might go the way you want. And if it did, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. But it just depends on the person, you know? I think we just have to listen and figure out what's more comfortable for them. Like I love what Kim said about it's softer. So finding that soft spot for folks.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. We've got Alex on the line. Alex, thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Yeah, segueing basically exactly to what you guys just talked about, you know, I know some people, whenever certain people in their lives, you know, even if you may know it's going to happen, when they pass away, they're basically just consumed by that grief, you know, even if you could be told months in advance, this person is going to die, this person will no longer be in your life, how can you properly, you know, I'm sure, like, those people don't get consumed and have their lives turned upside down by the loss of their loved one, and how can you make sure that everyone's prepared and is able to move forward healthily and smoothly?
Great question, Alex. Thanks for that. Kim Burgess, what do you think?
Yeah, Alex, that's a great question. You know, I do talk to families early on about what we call anticipatory grief, especially with a terminal diagnosis, and especially when hospice gets started as well, is that we have this, we are sitting here and just kind of anticipating that death will happen. We just don't know if it is, you know, months, weeks, or how long. I have a 95-year-old that I'm supporting right now who has some heart issues, and she chose not to get a pacemaker, right? And so the family has this feeling of anticipatory grief. We know she will not be with us, you know, much longer. But on the other hand, when is that going to happen? And we talk through it. Everybody's journey is very, very different, and we meet them where they are on that journey. And then we also make sure to use the grief counselors with their hospice organization.
Darnell, another topic I wanted to ask you about, that you may have a particular experience with is, you know, we know historically people who are Black have not gotten the same level of care in our healthcare system. And this is actually part of that plot of that episode in that TV show we were talking about. Talk to me about what it's like to be a death doula as a Black man.
No, absolutely. I come from Charlottesville, Virginia. And just 10 years ago, there was a study done that showed that 30% of the medical school students at this top 100 hospital didn't believe that Black people felt pain on the same level as their white counterparts. And so this play, you know, I'm sure Kim may have seen it in the medical side of it, but it plays a role in how, you know, everything from babies in the NICU to people in palliative care are medicated, you know, and so I come in often as an advocate for, you know, and I have to talk to medical teams and say, well, you know, why are they giving Tylenol when it should be morphine? Or, you know, why aren't they receiving the same level of care? And then we have that conversation. But I also go into family, have to have these conversations with families when my clients are Black and say, well, let's talk about the reality of this. And do you feel that you're being treated the way you should be? But yeah, it goes into the advocacy, but it also goes into, you know, community. We are very communal folks. And so it's getting the family around, having those conversations with the family and the planning and making sure that everyone who wants to be there can be there. Because it's going to take everybody. And then there's a celebration of life when, because of history and faith and trauma over the years, people didn't want to share these with, you know, what they consider burdens. And so many Black folks have died in silence or didn't properly grieve themselves even, or had to be the strong one for the rest of the family when they were the ones who were dying. And so having those conversations are important as well.
Let me ask what may be an intemperate question, but medical care is so expensive in America, and so much of that spending comes in the last days, months, weeks of life, oftentimes. Kim, how is this paid for in a lot of cases?
Right. And that's the unfortunate part, is our system is not designed to support financially the end of life or death doulas. It typically is a private pay type of situation. Now, hospice is paid for by the insurance, usually at 100%. But unfortunately, the end-of-life doulas is an added support that we're able to bring to the table. Unfortunately, it is a private pay situation. It also ranges in prices as well.
Darnell, is there, have you heard of any efforts to sort of mainstream this? Or I guess that's not the right term. I'm trying to think of like sort of get it into insurance coverage, right? Or something where it would be something that's a little more broadly. Yeah, go ahead.
I hear it all the time. I hear, the fight to make that happen, just because of how important our roles are here. But I don't know if anyone's budging. And I'm thankful to know a lot of death doulas and end-of-life doulas and caregivers who are offering their services, some for free, some on, pay what you can situations. It's like for me, if I'm nearby, then I'll gladly come and help. If I have to fly there, then of course I need help. But if I can reach you, then I'll be there at no cost. And I'm thankful to know so many people who are doing the same.
Is this, I wonder if the training that you do or what opportunities there are for people who maybe are not quite interested in taking this on professionally, but they know they have family members who may be approaching these stages of life. Is there something people, everyday people can do, from the next generation's aspect of things to sort of prepare themselves ahead of time for what experiences and what knowledge they might need going into these situations?
Yeah, I'll be happy to answer that. I actually did my training through International End of Life Doula Association. Shortened, it's called INELDA. And it was an online course that I did. And there are in-person courses as well. I did mine hybrid. So I think there's other organizations out there, but I did mine through International End of Life Doula Association.
And Darnell, what do you think about that? Is this something that people should read up on to maybe take on themselves to some extent?
I mean, there are many amazing certification programs, and INELDA is one. I work with them often, and I love the work they're doing. Going with Grace is another. But again, we've been doing this work for centuries without this title, and I think I know that being certified isn't necessary to care for someone, in this way, to just be present and to just listen and to love someone and help prepare them for the end of life. And like I said, my grandmother had done the work, my mother, she did the work, and none of them were ever certified. But if you want to come in and learn how this runs and how this works and build the community for yourself, then certification definitely helps. But if you just want to go in and help your family and help friends, then going in and listening and being present and, holding a hand or sitting at the end of the couch and not saying anything, that's the work too.
Yeah, a lot of times they teach you it's called, just holding space, right? You just want to go and just be present. It could be without words for sure. And it's just making sure that no one is alone, and we are there to support them in that way as well.
Absolutely.
All right, a couple more text messages I want to read here. Ryan in Champaign said, "When I die, I would like to be tossed in the woods to decompose naturally." I'm guessing that isn't legal. I will say, Ryan, that there has been some legislative effort in Illinois to make that a reality. It is not yet passed. You are right. But then we did ask a sort of more, how would you say it, philosophical or maybe religious, if that's how people believe, question of our listeners. And so Ryan goes on, "What happens when we die? Our families get burdened with ridiculous costs and loss of income because we live in a capitalist hellscape." But then he said, "If this was a question about a magical afterlife, then there's absolutely no reason to think that's a possibility." Okay, that's one end of the spectrum. Juliet in Bettendorf, Iowa, though, says, "I believe our souls, spirits live on, and we are connected beyond our tangible lives through thoughts and presence that is difficult to explain in text messaging." Okay, fair enough, Julia. Thank you for those perspectives. Darnell, what do you think about this? How do you handle, I imagine you deal with people from a range of different beliefs and backgrounds. How do you talk about, what happens after the transition?
You know, I come in and I believe whatever my client believes for them. So that's where I start. But I do share stories that I've had with different clients. I talk about how I'd say most, if not all, of my clients, when they're at the end of their life, they see a loved one coming back for them in the room. And so I share that. I talk about my own. I think we get to a point, like I love when Kim brought up the life review while people are still here, because I believe we have one when we die as well. And I share that. But I'm open to believing whatever my client wants to believe in, and getting them there to where they want to be. And to just go with what Ryan said, I too want to be thrown in the woods. But there are natural burial grounds where you're not just thrown in the woods, but you are naturally buried in the earth.
Human composting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Human composting. And me and put a rocket at the head, and that's it. And so that's an option. And there are so many other ways to do it that are, you know, cost effective and so much better for this planet.
Kim, we are coming to the end of our time together. What do you have a different perspective, or what do you think about questions of what happens after death?
No, I absolutely, I come into this thinking there is an afterlife. I mean, I think like Darnell says, what we have seen from witnessing at the bedside of our terminally ill clients it's sometimes you just can't question it then. I mean, I've had a 95-year-old that she saw her mother the hours before. And I mean, it just seems so real that she was putting her arms out and reaching for her and talking with her. I have a client right now that also said just a couple weeks ago, comes out saying, I saw Jesus. Jesus was here. He said, it's not my time yet. But I will be with him shortly. So, you know, there's so much that is hard to deny when you sit and hear these stories and sit with your clients and the emotions they see and feel. But no matter what their belief is, we meet them on their journey, because we don't ever, put our, faith belief in theirs. We just meet them where they are.
All right. And Darnell, I guess, final question, what is the case if somebody's on the fence about doing this? How do you make the case that you know what you are bringing to them is something that is, you know, valuable and worth pursuing?
No, absolutely. I tell them that it's love. It's all love. I, you know, planning is love. Getting to the end is a beautiful thing. This is the one thing we all have, and if we can do it with just a little help, just a, you know, a little support. Mm-hmm. That counts. We see what happens when planning doesn't happen, when families don't want to talk about it. And if we can avoid that, why not? Especially with people who are there, who want to love them, who want to hold their hand along the way.
Well, Darnell Lamont Walker. Oh, go ahead, Kim. Just
sorry,
briefly,
one last thing. You know, I just basically say you don't get a do-over, right? It's not like you go, well, I didn't like the way that ended. Let me do it again. So I just tell people to reflect on that as well. But having somebody present with them who loves them and supports them is a beautiful thing.
Yes.
No makeup tests. Absolutely. Kim Burgess is an end-of-life doula with Comforting Transitions in O'Fallon, Illinois. Darnell Lamont Walker is a death doula and the author of Never Can Say Goodbye, The Life of a Death Doula and the Art of a Peaceful End. Kim, Darnell, thanks so much for sharing your work with us today on the 21st
Show.
Thank
you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
More to come after a short break. We're going to be pivoting and talking about amphibians, Bad Bunny, the Super Bowl halftime show, and a zoo here in Central Illinois. This is the 21st Show.